welcome back to the program. Even though it may seem that much of the fervor and noise of the Christian right has quieted a bit over the years, behind the scenes, these groups have been more active than ever, particularly in our nation's schools. Christian groups continue to engage in national advocacy programs designed to, in their view, take back American public schools and repurpose them with a fundamentalist agenda. We're going to talk about this today with my guest, Catherine Stewart. Catherine has written for the New York Times, Reuters, and The Guardian, and it is my pleasure to welcome her here today to talk about her new work, The Good News Club, The Christian Right's Stealth Assault on America's Children. Catherine Stewart, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Delight to have you here. You found out about this Good News Club almost quite by accident.
Yes, I was living in Santa Barbara, California, and my daughter was in kindergarten, and a Good News Club announced that it was going to show up in our public elementary school. And at first I thought, this is no big deal. You know, what could be bad, wrong with a group called the Good News Club? It has such an innocuous name. But I started to hear stories from parents around town whose kids attended schools where Good News Clubs had recently been established. And I started to hear stories about how kids attending the clubs were targeting their non-Christian peers for what I can only describe as faith-based bullying. One girl, for instance, that we knew was targeted by a girl who had just started attending the Good News Club, who had figured out that she wasn't a Christian. She was a member of a minority faith, and the girl attending the club said, "You're going to go to hell because you don't believe in Jesus." And the other girl objected, saying, "That's not true." So the teacher overheard this exchange and explained that different religions have these different perspectives on different issues. Now, the girl who was targeted for the bullying, she accepted this and was fine with it. But the other girl, she was devastated. The girl attending the Good News Club, actually, she started crying. And she said, "How can this be? I know it must be true because they taught it to me in school. And they don't teach things in school that aren't true. How can they lie to us in school?" So this kind of story gets to the heart of the problem with Good News Clubs. I don't have a problem with kids having conversations with their friends about religion at school, but I do have a problem with girls or boys like Ashley, who are attending Good News Clubs, thinking that a particular religious belief is endorsed by their public schools.
What did the school know about what was going on?
Well, the school knew that the group was sponsored by an organization called the Child Evangelism Fellowship. And frankly, they didn't want the group coming to our public school. But they couldn't prevent them from coming to our public school thanks to a 2001 Supreme Court decision called Good News Club versus Milford Central School. In that decision, the courts basically pushed free speech so far that the Establishment Clause, which prohibits government endorsing or funding of an establishment of religion, was eviscerated. They basically called all the activities that the Good News Club are doing as just speech from a certain point of view rather than religious activity. But in fact, you know, the goal of Good News Clubs is to evangelize, in their words, evangelize boys and girls with the Lord Jesus Christ. Now, this is clearly religious activity.
Even though this religious activity was going on, once the school was made aware of it in your case, what did they think they could do about it, if anything?
Well, you know what happened? It's interesting. Even though many of the parents in our school district were evangelical, they did not want the club coming to our public school. And a group of them met with the leaders of the Good News Club. You know, our school was in the same district as an evangelical college, and so all the professors and kids went to our school. And so these evangelical parents, mostly mothers, got together with the Good News Club leaders, had a meeting, and said, "You know, we know you mean well. We are actually, you know, believe in the precepts of your religion. We're evangelical too. But you're just not right for our school." And they offered them free and better space at the same time in an evangelical church that was literally next door to the school. I mean, literally, you know, 40 feet away, the Montecito Covenant Church. It's a gorgeous church. And the Good News Club leaders declined. They wanted to be in the public school because they know very well that young children cannot distinguish between an activity that takes place in the school and one that is endorsed by the school. Children think if it happens in the school, it must be true. Like, remember, we're talking little kids here. For them, no institution has as much authority as a public school. They think if it happens in school, it must be what the school wants them to believe. And the Good News Club leaders know that, which is why they're so insistent on establishing these clubs in public schools right at the end of their school day, right after the bell rings, to appear a seamless part of the school day.
And as you dug deeper into this, you found that there was a very specific plan that these groups had laid out, that one involved very much being in the school, as you say, but also really targeting those kids between 4 and 14 years old.
That's absolutely true. At the National Convention for the Child Evangelism Fellowship, which is the sponsoring organization of Good News Clubs, they the keynote speakers really talked about all it takes to take back the culture, as they call it, is two generations of these kids in public schools. They called it, they said, this is the most strategic age group that we have. They, one of the keynote speakers, a fellow named Matt Staver, who is the president and founder of Liberty Council, an organization that provides Good News Clubs with their legal support, he referred to as children as strategic machinery. Mm-hmm. And he said, you know, this is a strategic age group. So they know very well that if they can persuade these young kids that the state, meaning, you know, the public school, which is an institution of the state, endorses a particular perspective on religion, then these kids are much more likely to give that, you know, religion credence. Schools, public schools have a kind of cloak of authority, and they're trying to use this to make kids think that this is what they should believe. Now, I want to make something very clear here. They call themselves Christian, but most activists I met believe that most Americans who call themselves Christians really aren't, including U.S. Episcopalians, United Methodists, Catholics, which they described as a whole other religion. I mean, that was kind of shocking to me. I really want to read you a little passage from my book that I found quite shocking when I was attending the National Convention of the Child Evangelism Fellowship. I attended a seminar called Reaching Out to the Hispanic Child, which was really about reaching out to children of Catholic families and trying to convert them to the evangelical faith. And the leader of this seminar, one of the head of the CEF Spanish Ministries, Claudia Calderon, she said, they call themselves Christians, meaning the Catholic children. The priest told them, you know, you're Christians in this church. It's a very fine line when the children tell me that they're Christians. They say they're Christians because they're born in a Catholic family. And she goes on to explain, how can we make children understand that being devout Catholic doesn't mean that they're the right kind of Christian? According to her and everyone else I met at the seat in the Child Evangelism Fellowship, these are two different religions, of course. So she said, one thing to remember when you're talking to them is never, don't discredit the Catholic Church, at least not at the beginning. So I thought that was kind of surprising. You know, the groups, you know, really come across, the Good News Clubs really come across as very harmless. I was very typical of most parents. They say singing Bible stories in front, what could be wrong with that, right? But it turns out that the Good News Clubs represent a very fundamentalist and extremist form of the Christian religion. And, you know, what are the Bible stories that they teach? Well, it was shocking to me that they teach a story, a Bible story, about it's a war of the Amalekites. It's, you know, their five-year curriculum cycle includes, for instance, a weekly standardized lesson about the Amalekites, which is in the first book of Samuel. It's a story in which the Israelites are having trouble with their neighbors, the Amalekites, and God orders Saul to exterminate them all, including, quote, the children and the babies. Saul does his best to carry out the deed, killing off the women, the children, the babies, most of the livestock, but he spares the king and a few of the tastier-looking animals. Now, according to Scripture, God is outraged by Saul's failure to execute this order in full. Now, this is one of these very interesting and challenging biblical stories and can be interpreted, has been interpreted in many ways by biblical scholars. But I want to note that it does have a history of showing up. When one sectarian group has its sights set on exterminating its rivals, Rwanda and Northern Ireland being just two of the many examples. But the relevant point here is that the Good News Club thinks that this is a story that should be brought to the attention and five and six-year-old children in public schools. Now, the lesson the Good News Club wants to teach is clear. You know, if God gives the order to kill everybody, you must do it to the letter, or you are committing the sin of disobedience. As the Good News Club manual specifies, teachers are instructed to say to the children, if only God, I'm reading from the manual, if only God had asked for if only Saul had asked God for the strength to obey completely. And in three separate places in this lesson plan, it tells the teachers to instruct the students to shout, God will help you obey. So as you can see, it's a very deep fundamentalism. There's an emphasis on obedience at all costs. It's a very it's a very strict form of the religion, and there are many ways to teach the Christian faith. Most of them do not involve this kind of interpretation of a challenging biblical story like this. When most parents are like me, they hear its Bible stories, singing and fun, they think, wow, this is just going to be, you know, a nice little, you know, they're going to teach the kids to sing Kumbaya and be kind to their neighbors. But that's not what they're learning at all.
Talk a little bit about the ways in which they've also filtered some of this down to athletic programs at some of these schools.
Interestingly, you know, the book I wrote, The Good News Club, covers a range of activities by the religious right to infiltrate public education. At the elementary level, you get these good news clubs. Good news clubs really aren't in middle and high schools. They're just in elementary schools targeting children in their first years of schooling. But in the middle and high school levels, right now, there's an enormous focus on introducing programs that inject religion into athletics. Organizations such as the Fellowship for Christian Athletes, which has reaches millions of kids every year. Now, personally, on the high school level, I don't have a problem if Jewish athletes or Christian athletes or Muslim athletes want to get together after school, perform acts of worship, and talk about their faith, because I think high school kids can distinguish between an after-school activity that's endorsed by their school and one that is brought in by an outside group. But the problem happens that a lot of these organizations, like the Fellowship for Christian Athletes, they try to get kids to make these prayers and religious activities a normal part of their school day sports activities, and thus it forces all kids to take a stand. And when you get into some of these schools where there is like large numbers of kids, a majority of kids joining an organization like the Fellowship for Christian Athletes, other kids who might not be theistic, might be members of different Christian denominations, might be members of minority faiths, they start to feel like they have to pray to play. I mean, it's an attempt to create a kind of faith-based peer pressure in these sports activities. And there's also kind of an attempt to identify athletics with a certain, you know, religious perspective. And this is very troubling. There's a writer who used to be the religion reporter for USA Today. His name is Tom Krattenmacher. He wrote a wonderful book about this dynamic called Onward Christian Athletes. And he writes about how there has just been an awful lot of money devoted to putting religion in athletics, not only on the high school and college level, but also into professional athletics. And we're starting to see that. I mean, we're seeing more overt displays of religiosity from one perspective, of course, in pro sports than we have in many years.
Who are the groups and the organizations that are behind the Good News Clubs?
Well, it's interesting. The sponsoring organization of Good News Clubs is an organization called the Child Evangelism Fellowship. It's been around since 1937, but they were not in public schools in any large number until that Supreme Court decision in 2001. The Child Evangelism Fellowship also has a presence in nearly 200 countries around the world, and they have something like 19 training institutes where they teach people how to evangelize children. But even as important as the Child Evangelism Fellowship is, I think if there are any groups driving the agenda, the overarching agenda of religion in public schools, it's the legal advocacy groups of the religious right. They do litigation from what they call a Christian perspective of, you know, tends to be a certain kind of Christianity. As we know, Christianity is very diverse in our country, but a kind of fundamentalist perspective. These organizations are the Alliance Defending Freedom, Liberty Council, the ACL, American Center for Law and Justice, Pacific Justice Institute, you may never have, not have heard of all these organizations, or maybe never heard of any of them, but they have combined budgets of over $100 million per year, and they have public schools in their sights.
When you say they have public schools in their sights, what does that mean?
Well, the Liberty Council, for instance, and also the Alliance Defending Freedom, they provide free litigation for a range of groups that are in trying to insert a particular Christian perspective into the public schools, such as Good News Clubs. They will also do things like the Alliance Defending Freedom collaborated with, I believe it's Focus on the Family, on a project called Gateways to Better Education, which is all about trying to get kids to evangelize their peers at school, find all these different ways to kind of inject Christianity into lesson plans and to and things like that. They also they're also in opposition to a lot of anti-bullying programs, which they say oppress the so-called Christian perspective. I think that that's really easy. These groups like the Gateways and the Alliance Defending Freedom claim to represent the Christian viewpoint, but their opposition to anti-bullying initiatives is very forceful, and basically they don't want schools communicating the idea that children shouldn't be bullied on account of their real or perceived sexual orientation.
To what extent are these groups operating in places where there might be a greater acceptance, places in Texas perhaps, or Alabama or Mississippi, and to what extent are they operating in places like New York and California?
That's a really interesting question. I mean, a Good News Club showed up in Santa Barbara, California. It's really not a region known for its religious conservatism, although, of course, there is some religious conservatism, and certainly in our community we had a very strong evangelical presence, which, by the way, largely opposed the appearance of a Good News Club in our school. The first chapter of my book, The Good News Club, deals with the appearance of a Good News Club in Seattle, which is definitely not an area known for its religious conservatism. And, what happened in Seattle is very predictable. When a group comes into a diverse community and sets itself in opposition to that community by insisting on putting its program in the public schools, it fractures the community. It's very sad what happened in Seattle. As one of the Seattle parents told me, the school community was called Loyal Heights. He said, "We used to be loyal. We were all united as Loyal Heights parents. We were all together. And all of a sudden, you walk into the playground, and now, all of a sudden, you look around and you think, well, you're a Jew, you're a Christian, you're the wrong kind of Christian, you're an atheist, you're a Buddhist." And he said, we used to all be, didn't think about religion. We were just all coming together in support of our kids. And now, since the Good News Club arrived, it sort of, ignited this needless religious war in our school. And I saw that happen in our public school in Santa Barbara, and I've seen it happen all over the country. When a group like the Good News Club forces its way into the public schools, other groups that are, not members of that particular religion, they necessarily feel sort of that the school maybe is not really a place where they belong. They start to feel that the school is a hostile place, and they withdraw. Many parents stop donating money to the PTA or stop donating hours to the science club and things like that. They sort of withdraw from the public school. And it would be nice to believe that the harm to the public school community was an unintended byproduct of the Good News Club activity. But what I learned in my research is that it is actually precisely the point. I found this hard to kind of accept, but I eventually realized that this is really what they want. They want to create harm to the public schools. Many fundamentalists simply do not accept public schools as legitimate enterprises in the first place. They think public education is secular education and therefore intrinsically hostile to religion. And at bottom, they don't accept the fact that we live in a diverse society with a secular form of government. The leaders of the Child Evangelism Fellowship, for example, say that public schools, quote, de-educate children by failing to educate them about Jesus. And they compare public schools to acts of war on the American population. One of the keynote speakers at their convention, Matt Staver, said he sees a mushroom cloud over the schools. So they, if they can't basically take over the public schools, they would be happy to just, you know, kick in the, if they can't just kick in the doors to the public schools, as they say, you know, those words, they would be happy to just, you know, destroy the schools altogether.
What pushback have you seen from school boards in certain communities, and what has been the result of that?
Well, I have seen many different school boards grapple with how to either exclude Good News Clubs from the after-school program or limit the scope of what they do. And they're really hamstrung by this 2001 Supreme Court decision. If a school has opened what's technically called a limited public forum, that is to say, if they allow after-school soccer or after-school art, then they have to let in a Good News Club. They can't discriminate against a Good News Club because of its perspective. But what I have seen some schools try to do is shut down the forum altogether. Some schools, in order to exclude a Good News Club, have actually canceled all after-school activities, like, you know, no more soccer, no more art. If you don't have any of that stuff, then you can exclude a Good News Club. Now, this is very, very sad because, look, schools are more than just bricks and mortar. They're places where we all set aside our differences, come together in support of our children. They're centers of the community. They're, you know, in many ways a sort of, you know, heartbeat of a community. And, you know, so you see that when a school has shut down the after-school thing, you know, forum altogether in order just to exclude this really, this religious group, then it really is a sad diminishment of public education. I believe it's part of the, you know, the Good News Club leaders don't mind this at all. It basically weakens public education, weakens support for public education. Something I didn't really talk about, and I want to make sure to mention, that one of the most controversial parts of the Good News Clubs, and the parts that seems to bother parents the most, is it's not only, you know, they basically use children to kind of reach the children whose parents haven't signed them up. So at every Good News Club training I attended, children were offered points or prizes for bringing their peers to the club, and sometimes given candy for bringing their peers to the club. So, you know, the first group of kids at a Good News Club will generally be signed up by parents who are theologically aligned with their mission. Many of them are already members of church groups that are partnered with the Child Evangelism Fellowship, and they get those first kids who are, by the way, already receiving religious instruction to go to the Good News Clubs. And then they use those kids to try to recruit their peers to the club. Little kids that I've met, you know, were, you know, well, parents tell me that, you know, 6 and 7 year old kids are told, oh, you know, you're going to go to hell if you don't believe in Jesus. Come to the club. You know, don't you want to be, you know, in this club? And then, you know, we'll get candy. And, interestingly, at the Good News Clubs that I attended, you know, the Good News Club leaders show up with these trays of candy and cupcakes and balloons and things like that. So they, you know, really understand very well what motivates 5 and 6 year old kids. I mean, my kids will do anything for a cupcake.
But certainly because these kids are as young as they are, the parents have a lot more control of them. And certainly parents can forbid their kids from going to these after school clubs.
That's absolutely true. They can. I mean, look, the Good News Clubs won't turn every child, obviously, into a fundamentalist Christian. But what they will do is tell children that there is a right group in society, one that has the endorsement of the state in the form of the public school, and then a wrong group of society. Kids see that if there's one religious group operating in the public school, they think that must be what the school wants them to believe. This is the favored group because it has a place in the public school. And as these children say, they don't teach things in public schools that aren't true. The other thing is that I think is deeply concerning. We really have to think about our Constitution. The very first clause of our very first amendment is Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion. Now, this is interpreted as meaning that our government should not fund or endorse any establishment of religion. But these Good News Clubs are basically compelling the state to subsidize their religious activities and to promote their religious agenda by placing them in public schools. they're receiving tiny, you know, they all after school groups tend to pay some kind of minimal amount of rent. I don't know, $12 for a classroom. It's usually very, very small. So by establishing these clubs in public schools, they're doing religious activities in public schools instead of doing them in their churches. They're asking the government to subsidize and promote their religion.
How widespread is this group, and is it growing?
The group, there are over 3,500 Good News clubs in public elementary schools. Their presence in public schools has grown 728% in the last 10 years. When I started writing this book, there were only 4 Good News clubs in Santa Barbara public elementary schools. Today, there are 11, so they are growing very fast.
And talk about the funding for them. Where is that coming from?
The funding is, that's an interesting question. The Child Evangelism Fellowship Good News clubs operate a little bit like, a multi-level marketing organization. The funding comes from the bottom and goes up the chain. So the way it works is that the Child Evangelism Fellowship will partner with a church that is theologically aligned with their mission, like a local evangelical or maybe a Pentecostal church or something like that. The church sees it as a way of marketing. If you get the kids, and you teach the kids, you're going to go to hell unless you go to a Bible-believing church. You need to go to church. That's what the kids are told. A Bible-believing church, by the way, not any old church will do. The children are basically, they think the kids will bring their parents to church. So for the churches, it becomes a form of marketing. And each Good News Club, so the churches will partner with a Child Evangelism Fellowship, recruit the labor, you know, to teach the kids from within their church pews. And the teachers are required to, they call it raise their own support, which is something like $20,000. Usually they'll get donations from the church that they're operating in. The church will, you know, set aside some money to do this. And then 10% of that money will go to the state office, and then 10% goes to the national office. So the money basically rises up the chain.
And do you see a way that these groups can coexist at all within the context of it being after-school clubs?
Look, I don't have a problem with after-school religious activities, but I don't think they should be taking place on the public school grounds. In my view, that amounts to an endorsement of a religion. And by the state, and many other parents feel the same way. You know, we don't ask. The other thing that's really interesting is they say that this is, you know, a thing of religious freedom, but it ends up being a freedom for a certain kind of religious activity alone. As I found in my research, when minority faiths try to exercise their, you know, their rights in the same way that perceived majority faiths do, they're shut down by, if not by law, then by public prejudice. For instance, there was a group in Miami, Oklahoma. There was a lot of Bible distribution in the public schools. The Gideons were going in and distributing Bibles. So a Muslim family decided that they were going to distribute some Qurans. They got so much hate mail they feared for their lives. In Maryland, there was a school that was distributing Vacation Bible Club flyers. And there were a couple of group people who worked with a non-theist club called, like a humanist club called Camp Quest. And they thought, okay, if we're distributing flyers, we'll distribute a flyer for our summer camp too. And they tried to do it, and they were told they couldn't by the principal. And they said, well, we have the right to do it since you're distributing Vacation Bible School flyers. So they were allowed to do it, and then the school got so much hate mail that the server crashed, and then the school kind of shut down the whole distributing, you know, they said that nobody's allowed to distribute anything. So as you can see, that when a minority faith try to do the same thing, it really doesn't it doesn't work the same way.
Catherine Stewart, her book is The Good News Club, The Christian Right's Stealth Assault on America's Children. Catherine, I thank you so much for spending time with us today.
Thank you so much, and if anybody's interested in learning more, my website is www.thegoodnewsclub.com.
Catherine Stewart, thank you so much.